You're listening to The Growth Signal, and my name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I am Amber Monroe.
And we are going to have a great conversation today. So Amber, let's get right into it. What is your hot take?
My hot take is customer success teams should own a revenue number.
Oh, we're going to throw down about this today. I can already tell, because I always tell people I live on the sales side of the house. So like, right. I'm usually like one of those people where I come in and I sell something. And there's been more than one time in which I walked out of my office and into my delivery team's office and I said, hey, you know, I just sold this thing. And I know it doesn't exist yet, but we're going to have to figure out how to do it because they want to start tomorrow. I really am. to be fair, we're a professional services firm, so it's a little bit different. Like, we don't have to build any new technology. And I'm usually helpful in the delivery side of it because we're a small business. That's so everybody great. Wears all the hats. I know that there's people out there like me who are doing that when they really aren't intending to help. So let's talk about the revenue number, because I'm in sales. Revenue numbers is all I know. And are you really going to take a piece of my pie?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to take a piece of your pie because we're going to grow the business together. And actually, my team is actually going to give you layups to close those deals. So I have been a big fan of customer success teams owning a revenue number for at least 5 years. Any organization I've worked at, one of the first questions I have is really understanding who owns that revenue number. And if it's only and solely in sales, I usually am not a big fan of how that organization operates, because I truly believe that CS is the best person to actually know when those signals for growth are available. More so than an AE who has potentially barely had a relationship with the customer over their tenure during their life cycle with us. And so I'm a big fan of teaching CS teams to really own a revenue number. And I think they are perfectly primed to be able to know exactly when to expand potential services, upsell, cross-sell, and they can really identify those hot qualified leads. And they don't necessarily have to close them. They can just hand them straight back over to their wonderful AE partner, and then we can close those deals together. And there's a great commission split between both of the AE and the CSM. So that way, both teams get a piece of the pie, but we close more deals and more revenue together. So I'm a big fan of CS owning a revenue number.
So one of the things I hear when people come on the show, because the people that I talk to are a mix of salespeople, marketing, customer advocacy, like the whole point of the show is to have conversations across the life cycle, right? Mm-hmm. Not just how you get them, but how do you keep them and how do you continue to stay with them as everybody's expectations evolve? So a lot of things that I hear from CS leaders is that they want to own a revenue number. And I agree with that. I think if you are not revenue generating, you're revenue responding. Either way, we all exist because of revenue. Mm-hmm. Nobody's doing this out of the goodness of our hearts. We're doing it for growth and revenue. However, when I talk to that next layer down, people who are actually in these CSM roles, they get a little bit of like the ick when we start talking about making them own revenue. Like, and you can just see them start to see themselves in that slimy, salesy, you know, four-letter word role. And they get a little nervous, or they get upset, or they say, hey, this is not what I was hired for. This is not what I was signed on for. So if our leaders are in wild agreement that we need to start thinking in terms of revenue, but our individual contributors aren't there yet, how can we get them to the point where they no longer fear the idea of selling?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think, too, is that everybody in our organization, we have like a big cultural shift that we've had to make in our organization to say, at the end of the day, we all are selling the business. Whether we're talking to our friends or our colleagues or to our customers, at the end of the day, we are selling the value of our services day in, day out. And the customer success team members, their responsibility is to demonstrate value and help customers be successful and achieve their goals and objectives with working with an organization. And so part of that is to deeply understand the pain points of the customer and where there's opportunity to come in and solve that pain, which could in turn lead to an upsell or a cross-sell. And so I think there are very clear ways that can be done really successfully, where it doesn't feel sleazy or icky or gross to go in and just really go in and sell. Now, you have to know the right moments in time to be able to actually drop those conversations. And so one of the things I usually do if a customer success team doesn't have a lot of familiarity with selling is I really start getting them that foundational training. So I'm a big fan of a company called Aspireship, who does great core foundation trainings for go-to-market teams. The grant-funded program that allows sales reps and CS teams to learn how to expand services with their customer base. I think those types of foundations are great. And then I think really, really even better is partnering closely with the sales team. So we are like a locked-in unit between the sales reps and my CSMs, and we make sure we are hand-in-hand supporting each other. And what we do is we really listen to sales calls. We listen to our sales team members, how they're pitching our services, how they're demonstrating value. Our team is like picking up those nuggets and saying, I can do that. I can do that. And getting them that level of comfortability that actually what we're doing is a benefit for our customers. It's not pushing something that they don't need. And so it doesn't become sleazy or icky if you're not pushing something they don't need, but actually you're solving a pain point when they do have it. Now you've just added value and you've created a stickier customer because now they have more services with the organization and you're supporting them through their journey. So that's how I get my team to really like shift their focus to be like, ew, selling, I don't want to do that.
100%. And one of the things, and you touched on a little bit, but I want to go a bit deeper. Again, the complaints that I hear from people in customer success roles is that sales gets all the support, sales gets all the enablement, sales gets all the training, and there's no budget left over for them, their tools, their solutions. So what are the things that we can do? If I'm hearing this and I'm either, let's go like two sides of the coin. If I'm a customer success leader and I want to help my team be more successful in their commercialization approaches, what kinds of resources can I bring in or mindset shifts? Or like, what's the one thing I should do first to get them to go on this journey with me?
Yeah, I mean, I think one is you have to drive the right incentive, so the right behavior. So if for us, it was really creating an incentive program and giving them that the foundational tools and resources to be successful. So really, it was partnering closely with our sales department, really creating what is, we call it an AMQL program, and it's our or a CSQL program, Customer Success Qualified Lead Program. It's where they really identify those lead opportunities and then they pass those off to the sales team. And so I think the first thing was for us is that we really had to shift our focus to not just being this cost-centered division, because I truly do believe in an organization. When your function in your organization costs the business money, I understand why sales team members are getting resources more so than a team that is costing the business money. So that's why I've always been a fan of having a revenue number, because it allows me an opportunity to say, hey, I can hit this revenue number and help us meet our goals as an organization. And I will incentivize in order to drive the right behaviors with my team. And so really, it's a little bit of an art to get that right incentives put together where it feels like this unified work between both the account manager, customer success team, and the sales department. And I think, too, it's really diving deep into, we do tons of role play in our organization. We do lots of practice sessions. We make sure our customers or customer success managers feel confident and comfortable in these conversations. And we make it a little competitive. Everybody likes a little competition. And so there are times where we will run little mini sprints where we're really trying to drive up our cross-sells or really trying to drive up our upsells. And that seems to get people like excited about, okay, you just landed this deal. You just landed this deal. And it gets people pumped. And so I think that has really shifted our culture in really getting our CS team members excited about like doing this type of work.
One of the things you mentioned was that a lot of CS teams on paper are a cost center. Mm-hmm. And that is a conversation that, I mean, we could probably have an entire podcast about cost centers versus revenue centers. But one of the things that I believe, my maybe hot take, is that you may be a cost center on paper for your organization,
mm-hmm.
but you are driving revenue. You're driving mm-hmm. retention. You're just not getting credit for it. Like,
yes.
you are just not standing up and shouting and saying, I did this, right? For mm-hmm. sales, I have a clear number. I either make it or I don't, right? And there's no real ambiguity between whether or not I made my number. And that's both liberating and stressful.
Mm-hmm.
Because liberating, because I can stand up and no one could argue if I was successful or not. And I can point to my success.
Right.
So you mentioned customer success qualified leads. What are other ways that you are helping your team not only tie themselves to revenue, but tie the narrative to the success that you are driving and prove the point? Because sometimes it's as much about the story you tell as the numbers you put up.
It is 100% the story you tell. And I think that, you know, when we first went through this shift, there was a little bit of a push and pull between me and the sales leader at the time. And the sales leader's like, actually, I could probably drive expansion better than the CS team. And I was like, I bet you I could do it better. I bet you I have more resources. I have double the amount of employees. I bet you we could hit those numbers quicker, better, and faster than in the sales department. That way, the sales team can focus heavily on that net new business and bringing in those new logos. And we can focus on really the retention, the expansion opportunities. And quite frankly, it was really about my passion for owning the revenue number and the story I was able to tell about how we could do it so successfully. And then also making sure that I was like tracking and monitoring consistently and pivoting, because then I was really able to, after a quarter, come back and say, listen, we contributed to this much in ARR growth for our organization because we cross-sold. And now I'm really like owning that number. I'm talking about it cross-functionally. I'm talking about it in leadership meetings. I'm talking about it in strategy meetings. And I think that's part of my job function, is to ensure that the story I'm telling really amplifies the work that my team is doing. And I have a responsibility to do that as the leader of this organization in that department. And so for me, it was really about telling that story. And then also, like, my sales reps love when my CS team is bringing them deals. And it is just like, it feels like synergistic. It feels like we are working towards the same goal together. And there's no fight about, oh, you get the commission or I get the commission. It is literally a strong commission split between the two. And both are getting credit for it. And both are getting incentivized to do it. So to me, it created like a stronger culture of collaboration. And so that to me has been, that's been the most profound way for me to really demonstrate the value that we bring to driving revenue for the business.
I do think though, there's a certain level of courage that's required to step yeah. into that accountability, right? Because if you stand up and you say, yes, I know you think you can do this, but I know I can.
Mm-hmm.
And like step up and you got to deliver. Right. You can't throw down the gauntlet and then miss.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, yeah, you do have to have a lot of courage. But I've got one incredible team, and I believe wholeheartedly that my team delivers. And I know my leadership team will bring the resources, the tools to ensure that we are successful. Our department is a really highly accountable, highly efficient and proficient department. I'm really proud of what we have built, and it allows me, it's pretty easy for me to actually stand up and say I'll own a revenue number because I have that much trust in the organization that we have built that we will hit those targets. And so for me, it was really about, you know, do we have the right people? Do we have the right resources? Can we apply the right incentives? And do we have the right culture? And when all those things aligned and it was a yes, for me, it was the easy part to actually say, I will own this. I'm happy to own this. And I'm excited and glad to own this.
So if you and I are in wild agreement that this makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
That this is the way that it should be. And that, you know, there's, as a seller, there's nothing I love more than someone bringing me a qualified lead. That's basically an already yes. It's mine
yes.
to lose. And that's like, that's all I want. So if you and I are in wild agreement on this, why is it not yet the industry standard?
That's a really good question. I think it's probably One, it probably has to do with the culture of your organization, right? So how is this? Are we talking about a sales-led organization? How do they view customer success as a whole? And also it could be some resistance to giving up a piece of that pie, very similar to the conversation we had earlier, and really kind of sharing that wealth across both teams. So I do think that it has to be the right culture, got to be the right organization. You have to have the right leadership in place on the CS team that has driven a revenue number before. Point blank, period. If you are leading a CS organization and you have no experience in owning a revenue number, then I think you really need to make sure before you commit to doing that, that you have some talk with your sales leaders, your colleagues, people in the CS industry that's owned a revenue number, so you know what pitfalls and you prep yourself for what is to come. I've owned a revenue number before in several different organizations. And so for me, it's kind of like second nature. It's something I want to do. It's something I'm excited about. It's something that helps shift value a lot quicker and helps me kill out more resources for my team when I need it. The ask is a lot easier for me as a leader when I'm owning a revenue number and I'm contributing to the top line growth. And so for me, I think those are some of the things that have to be in place in order for you to want to do this. There's also this, I think that very, almost like a fixed mindset about CS folks don't want to sell. I think that really you can change that behavior in your organization with the right leadership. You have the ability and the control to be able to do that. It's just a big mind shift focus. Like you just have to kind of shift that in your organization in order to be fully prepared and ready to go down this path. And there's probably a lot of prep work and some change management that has to happen if your organization isn't fully ready for it. But I definitely think that we are seeing more CS departments start to roll into the CRO. We are seeing a lot more of the CS departments start to roll into the CEO. And I think who you roll into is very important. If I am going to own a revenue number, I am looking to be a part of that go-to-market team. I want to be close with marketing. I want to be close with sales. And I want to be close to whoever is leading the revenue growth for our organization. And so for me, sometimes that isn't in line with how the organizational structure, and that will help me in my decision-making process of which organization I choose to go to as well. It's important to me that I am working closely with leaders that are driving revenue for the business, because that's what I'm passionate about too.
If I'm hearing this and I've never owned a revenue number, I'm a CS leader, I have a team, I can either see the writing on the wall that my organization is headed this way, or I believe, you know, they bought into what we're saying here and the importance of this, but they've never owned a number before. Are there resources out there? Do they find a mentor? Like, what do they do short of saying, well, I guess I'll go work for someone who's owned a number and learn from them and then come back someday? Like, what do they do to get that experience needed to step boldly into that revenue number ownership?
I mean, I went 100% first recommend that they partner with their colleague in the sales department, right? So the sales leader has owned that revenue number before and he's someone that could help work through this with you. And I don't know if I was first starting out again, and it was the first, because I was the first time where I had started owning a revenue number for the first time. We all had our first. I definitely don't think you should shy away from doing that, but I do think that you have to have the right support network around you to ensure that you are successful. I don't know if I would own a revenue number right away too. I would say, hey, let's pilot this. Let's test this out. Let's make sure this works for our organization. Let's make sure this works for our team. I would pilot it out for a quarter or two. And then I would say, once you're confident that the playbook you have in place is actually working and producing revenue for the business, at that point, then I would really assess of like, okay, let's start small. Let's own a piece of this from a revenue standpoint, and then let's work toward it. I'm a big fan of finding mentor. I'm a big fan for coordinating with the other CS leaders that own revenue numbers in a similar size organization that you're currently working in. And I definitely am like the biggest fan of collaborating with your peers. So working with those cross-functional teams that own revenue numbers to work collaboratively together and get that almost like sponsorship and support that you are doing this together in order to move the business forward as a unit, as an organization. And it's better for both teams, better for both parties. So I'm definitely someone that's like, you have an opportunity here to own the revenue number, but you can pilot it out at the very beginning. You'd say, hey, let's test it out. Let's see how it goes. Let's see if it works. And then you can iterate from there before you say, okay, I'm ready to own that revenue number. I mean, I did in this organization. I was like, we've never done this before. Our team has never done this before. Let's make sure we get the structure right. Let's make sure we get the incentive program right. Let's make sure we're actually driving revenue. Once we started driving it, then it was like, all right, I'm ready to now own that revenue number. It wasn't forced upon me. It was something that was agreed upon between myself and the leaders of our organization that we would own that number moving forward.
You know, thinking about all of the people that you know or aspire to know, who else is out there? Who else should we be listening to?
Oh my gosh. I would love to tell you about actually a leader that I love everything she does. Her name is Cy Wakeman, and she's going to be very well known, but she has a book called Reality-Based Leadership, and it's Ditching Drama in the Workplace. And it was then one of the number one leadership books I read when I first got into leadership. And it has been one of the ones that I've carried with me throughout my entire leadership journey. It's a very easy read. She has tons of tools and resources, but it's really about calling your people up to greatness and really saying that a lot of employees spend a lot of time complaining about work. And you don't realize how much time you're actually spending thinking about things or complaining to your peers about work. And all of that does is distract you from actually doing the work and doing the things you want to do. So it's really like, how do we create a culture that actually doesn't allow for that to continue to happen or allow for that to like fester and multiply throughout the organization? It is a profound book. The way she talks about ditching drama in the workplace is something that has literally changed how I show up and how I lead my team.
I'm going to have to definitely grab a copy of that. Shameless cross promotion. I have a second podcast, a sister podcast called Taking Back Monday. And the entire premise of the show is that we can love the work that we do. We can love our 9 to 5 or our 5 to 9 or whatever it is for you, that we can say goodbye to the Sunday scaries and hello to the new future of work. So I'm going to have to check that out because that both aligns to what I love over there. But yeah, I think it's a really important conversation of if you're just spending time creating drama, you're not spending time building growth and building relationships and building connection. And so I'm really looking forward to checking that out.
Yeah. She always talks about you're the source of your own suffering. So it's really funny because it's like, oh my gosh, we're the source of our own suffering. Okay, so I'm not going to be the one that suffers anymore, which is a great thing because now you have control.
Right.
Right. If you're the source of your own suffering, ownership. You have control. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's profound. It's really great. She has an audio book. She has other books too. I actually got to see her. She was a keynote speaker when I was a leader, and I got to hear her live. And after I left that, we did a book club, and we're about to kick off a book club, and our entire leadership team and our organization is about to kick off her book next week. So awesome. Really, like, she's top of mind for me right now because I'm super excited to like share some of the teachings that she has with our leadership team so we can just be better as a unit.
I love that. I think it's so important. And you know, people might say, well, that's soft work. I have real work to do, right? But the soft work is what turns you into a high-performing team. That's
Absolutely.
The difference between good teams and great teams.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you've got to refine those leadership skills. You've got to refine, constantly refine. You can't just, you know, wing it and saying, hey, this is working. Like, you've got to refine, you got to iterate, and you have to grow. And this is a great way to like, just almost, it makes you really self-reflect about how you show up. And then it's so, it is so funny when you read the book, if you get a chance to, there's so many moments throughout the book where you're just like, oh, I totally do. I was about to fire off a nasty, nasty gram via email because someone frustrated me. It's so funny because it's so real. And I think that's why I liked it so much, because it's such an easy read.
Yeah. Well, and especially if it's grounded in real, if it's grounded in reality, right? Not just theory, but actual, like, this is what the world is like. And that's what I love.
Me too.
You know, if someone is really connecting with you, they want to learn more, they want to follow along, where can they find you online?
They can find me on LinkedIn. If you just go to Amber Monroe, I am there. I am online pretty heavily. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so they can always find me on LinkedIn. You can send me a private message, comment, chat. Happy to connect with anybody.
Well, I follow Amber on LinkedIn, and I can endorse. She has great content, great ideas. You will get a lot from sending her a connection request. So I will plus one for making sure that you follow up with Amber. Let her know that you heard the podcast, that you loved it. And we are so excited to share your ideas today. Amber, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was great.